Star Wars Action News presents Republic Forces Radio Network, bringing you coverage of Star Wars, The Clone Wars. Our hosts will review the toys, books, comics, games, and all things related to the Clone Wars animated series. And after each new episode airs on Cartoon Network, our hosts will recap and review the show. And we want to hear your thoughts on The Clone Wars. Call us at 415-508-JEDI every Saturday after a new episode, and your call may be played on the air. This week, we discuss the latest episode, Witches of the Mist.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Republic Forces Radio Network, this time covering Witches of the Mist, the finale to the Night Sisters arc. And joining me this evening is Jen.
Hello.
Jerry.
Yes, my master.
And Nathan P. Butler.
Hey, everybody.
We are here discussing Witches of the Mist, episode 58, season 3, episode 14, production number, season 3, episode 12. Our fortune cookie this week is the path to evil may bring great power, but not loyalty. And before we jump in, let's go ahead and get our episode summary.
We begin on Coruscant, where Republic Commando Delta Squad, Boss, Fixer, Scorch, and Sev are returning the bodies of Master Housing and his Padawan to the Jedi Temple. The Jedi are concerned about what could have inflicted such devastation.
This is not the work of a Sith Lord or a Jedi, but a reckless, impulsive animal.
Meanwhile, Savage Opress begins his Sith training under the tutelage of Count Dooku. Back on Coruscant, Obi-Wan is summoned to review security footage from Devron with Yoda and Mace Windu. He receives a bit of a shock.
Darth Maul alive? It can't be. I killed him myself.
After learning that this Zabrak comes from Dathomir, not Iridonia, Obi-Wan is charged with the task of going to get some answers about this mysterious new threat. Elsewhere, Savage's Sith training takes a brutal turn as Count Dooku teaches him to tap into his hatred. Savage has begun his journey, but Dooku still has some secrets he isn't going to part with just yet. Obi-Wan and Anakin land in Savage's home village and are immediately attacked by the men there. However, after a short fight where they are careful not to harm any of the men, they find the answers they seek. The man was taken from the village as a mate by a woman from Mother Talzin's clan. The Jedi are allowed to leave in peace. Count Dooku, meanwhile, dispatches Savage to kidnap King Kadunko of Toydaria and kill all others who get in the way. As Savage sets off on his first mission, the Jedi arrive to pay a call on Mother Talzin and her Night Sisters.
I tend to be popular with the ladies.
Too popular.
After some verbal sparring with the Jedi, Mother Talzin gives up the goods on Savage, revealing his location to be Toydaria and telling the Jedi his name. Satisfied, the Jedi depart for Toydaria. After the Jedi leave, Mother Talzin informs Asajj that the time for the revelation of her plan has come. It is time to move against Count Dooku. On Toydaria, Savage Opress makes his way to the king, leaving a wake of dead Toydarians behind him. When the king informs Savage he will not be intimidated, Savage slams him up against a wall, knocking him unconscious, and hauls him away. The Jedi arrive just in time, and a lightsaber battle ensues, during which the king wakes up and attempts to escape. However, Savage reaches out with the Force and kills him. As his body falls to the floor, Savage impedes the Jedi, escapes the throne room, pushes the Jedi's ship off the landing platform, and escapes. Once free, Obi-Wan and Anakin borrow a Toydarian ship and pursue Savage to the orbiting Separatist dreadnought. Aboard the cruiser, Dooku is most displeased with his new apprentice. And though Savage begs for forgiveness, Dooku has no intentions. As Savage absorbs large amounts of Force lightning, Asajj Ventress arrives and delivers some chiding remarks to her former master.
That's no way to treat your apprentice. I should know.
Though Dooku offers Savage the chance to redeem himself by eliminating Asajj, she reminds him of his true mission. In the ensuing lightsaber duel, Savage and Asajj are frustrated at every turn in their efforts to kill Dooku. Finally pushed too far by the battle and the berating from Asajj, Savage turns on her and the battle becomes a free-for-all. Dooku escapes, followed closely by Asajj, and Savage is left behind, just as Obi-Wan and Anakin join the party. Anakin and Obi-Wan take on Savage as Dooku and Asajj continue to fight in the corridors of the separated ship. As Dooku gets the upper hand and prepares to land a death blow against Asajj, she deflects his saber thrust and slips into his escape pod. Obi-Wan and Anakin's fight with Savage lead them into the hangar bay, where the droids stationed there receive word that Savage is a traitor and is to be eliminated. As the Jedi and droids all assault Savage, he delivers a force repulse that flings all of them to the floor and makes his escape. Anakin and Obi-Wan follow suit and flee the Separatist ship as well. Savage returns to Mother Talzin, demoralized by Asajj's betrayal and the Jedi's pursuit. However, Mother has a plan. Someone to teach Savage to be powerful enough to take them all on.
You have a brother.
A brother? But all of my kin were killed.
Not all of them. He lives in the Outer Rim, in exile. You will find him. He will teach you everything you need to learn to become even more powerful.
Mother then gives Savage a talisman to lead him in his search of the Outer Rim for his brother, Darth Maul.
All right, let's go around and see what everyone thought of this episode. And as is our custom, ladies first. Jen, what did you think of Witches of the Mist?
Oh, man, I'm excited to go first this week because this was a really cool episode. I had so much fun with this. The visuals alone, I actually went through after I watched it and I rewound the whole thing and I watched it again, like, immediately because it was so pretty. Like, they're getting amazing with their visual stuff. Maybe it's been like really good for the past couple weeks and I just haven't noticed or something, but this week I really noticed it. And they did something like with Obi-Wan's face, something like the armature that they're using, the digital motion points in his face or something. He looks like much more realistic now. The clothing, it's not just like painted on like it used to be. Like Mother Talzin, she's got like layers of cloth like kind of wrapped around her now. It looks fantastic. Savage's motion, he looks and moves really bulky like this big troglodyte guy. It's just come so far from that little stick walk that Padme did in Bob Mad Jedi in season one. Like, my jaw was on the floor the entire time. As for the content, this was fantastic too. And it actually made me feel really sympathetic toward Asajj Ventress. So I'm enjoying it. This is a great finale to this trilogy, and I'm so glad neither Savage or Asajj is dead.
Nathan P.
You know, we have seen, I think it's something around the lines of, 58 episodes or something like that, including this one, 62, if you count in the four that made up the movie. And I think they've finally done it. I think this episode has given us the episode that is my favorite by such a gigantic margin that it's going to take a long time, probably, before we see an episode that can knock the crown off of its head. I was blown away. I mean, this had everything in it that you would want from an episode of The Clone Wars. You got references to the films, ties into the expanded universe, ties into earlier parts of this series, great action sequences, you know, ones that actually show some strategy, not just battering each other, character development, humor, lots of humor, an interesting twist to add to the saga at the end, great sound work, great character models. I mean, this episode really kind of blew me away, and you could almost create a checklist of the things you would need for greatness in an episode of The Clone Wars, and this hit every mark. Yes, there's a lot of complaining out there right now and a lot of hand-wringing over what do we do, what is the implications of the ending with Maul, and what's the implications of the commandos showing up and that sort of thing. But, you know, it's something that opens a lot of doors. It doesn't feel like it shut a lot, nor does it feel like it really harmed anything for those who are more obsessive with the overall saga than they are about the series. But whether you're an EU fan, a series fan, a film fan, I think this episode nailed it. At least, in my opinion. I could be wrong.
Thank you, Nathan. Jerry, what did you think?
Okay, I guess, I want to make sure everyone understands me here when I say this. Nathan and Jen, I can see why you guys are so excited about this episode. And quite frankly, let me just say, I wish every episode of Clone Wars was this good. I really do. I wish every episode gave me this feeling of a comfort level to where, yes, this feels like Star Wars. These are the themes and the elements that I want to see in Clone Wars week in and week out. But at the same time, this episode didn't wow me, but it okayed me, okay? Which isn't a complaint. I'm not being negative here. That's to be positive. It's just because we've had some, in my opinion, we've had some serious stinkers in this series. And this one was, to me, a really above average episode, but I wasn't wowed by it. Was this the best episode ever? Maybe. I'd have to think about it, though. I didn't get done watching it and say, man, that was the best ever. But at the same time, the trilogy, the whole arc was super solid. I don't know how I feel about, because I kind of feel like everything built up to this episode that didn't really do anything for us. We don't know. We've got to watch other episodes to figure out what actually just happened. But I could see to where if you saw all three of these episodes together in one of those special one-night showings, that you probably thought that was great to see all that together. I just kind of feel like that we've spent a lot, you know, the last 3 weeks, and we still don't really know much. That being said, after we get the next episodes and find out what's going on with this Darth Maul and Qui-Gon Jinn and what's up with the Force, blah, 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 that it's all going to paint just an amazing picture. So overall, hey, great episode. I'm not dogging it at all, but I don't walk out of this thinking that this was the best the Clone Wars can ever be.
All right. Thank you, Jerry. I'm actually going to side with Nathan and Jen on this one. I loved this episode. This was amazing. The visuals, my wife walked through when I was watching it at the very beginning when the Republic commandos were landing with the two Jedi corpses, and she even said, wow, and she never watches the show, if she can help it. The visuals are amazing. The sound was incredible. The score during the scene where Dooku is zapping the daylights out of Savage and Ventress walked in, that score was awesome. Very well placed. And the story itself, I really enjoyed it. And I don't know if this is interrelated at all, but all this sudden hype using episode one characters, using prequel characters, which is something we've complained about. Why don't they ever dip into the prequel trilogy? Now they are in a big way. And I have to wonder if all this resurrection, as it may or may not be, of Darth Maul, and as we'll get into later, we know Qui-Gon Jinn's coming. Does this have anything to do with possibly the release of Episode 1 in 3D next year? Are we trying to hype folks up for that, or is it just a coincidence and they're finally listening and using some prequel trilogy characters like we've asked? But overall, great episode, great conclusion to the trilogy. Nice to see we have another crazy loose end running around the galaxy with a double-ended lightsaber now.
Dan, I think that is, let me comment on that. I think that's an awesome point. I hadn't put two and two together of Phantom Menace coming in 2012 and, you know, getting everyone re-familiar with those elements, because it's so easy to forget everything. Obi-Wan looks nothing like he did in that movie. Anakin was a little boy. Darth Maul's gone. Who's Qui-Gon Jinn? That's a fantastic point.
Well, thank you, Jerry. Okay, let's jump right into it then. Witches of the Mist. And within the first 30 seconds, we see something that has been built up and built up, and people have been so excited to see. We see the Republic Commandos land on Coruscant with the corpses of the Jedi killed at the end of last week's episode, or I guess the Jedi and his Padawan. And we see Boss, Fixer, Sev, and Scorch walk off of the attack shuttle with the casket, I guess. And there they are in all their glory, animated Republic Commandos. Now, I don't necessarily know if a couple sentences was worth all the hype, but it still was nice to see them, I felt. And seeing the T-visors glow in the dark, since that was one of the images that Karen Travis used so much in her books, seeing the door open and those four glowing blue T-visors was a pretty cool nod.
I kind of like the idea that this was sort of a drop-in. I mean, we talk about how we wonder how much they're going to plan ahead and that sort of thing. But it's kind of cool to be able to say, look, that an episode where the requirements for new character models weren't all that gigantic compared to other episodes, they had this thing they've been wanting to do that both the team was a fan of and the fans are a fan of, and why not? Why not work them in there? I mean, there are times when I think we've complained that it seems like they bring in things for the heck of it, or sometimes where they bring in things like, say, I mean, one of the big complaints about the Mandalorians being, could this have been any other culture rather than the Mandalorians because of the effect that it had on other materials and that sort of thing, you know, while following Lucas's vision and it having sort of an echoing effect on other things. But this was just one of those things where you have a nice, cool little appearance of these characters. It doesn't affect anything. They're just sort of there, and it's a nice nod to the fans and to, for lack of a better term, the LucasArts folks who worked on the game itself. I don't remember exactly the name of the group within LucasArts that was working on the game itself. Now, these are, to kind of give us the continuity nod here, this is Delta Squad that we're seeing here. So this is the Clone Trooper group, or the Republic Commando Troopers that we saw in the Republic Commando video game first. That's what they were created for. They had the tie-in novel Hard Contact by Karen Travis. That introduced Omega Squad, different squad. They then continued through several more books, Triple Zero, which brought the two squads together quite a bit more, True Colors, Order 66, eventually going into Imperial Commando 501st, which still kept up with both squads, mostly Omega, though. And they gathered a great fan following, and it really brought a lot of new readers to Karen Travis's stuff, both in-universe and out-of-universe. What I actually find interesting is that this episode caused a huge explosion on some message boards about, aha! This is why Karen Travis isn't writing for Star Wars anymore. See? It's the Republic Commandos in the series. And a couple of things jump out at me about that would say, whoa, going overboard, because they didn't really do anything. They didn't do anything that would affect anything, even within the show itself. All they do is deliver a body here and show off their cool armor in that awesome scene with the rain and everything. Karen Travis has said the reason why she's not writing for Star Wars anymore was because there's something about the Clone Wars cartoon series and plans going forward that somehow or another undermined what she wanted to do. They would have to have approved it, that she wanted to do with Imperial Commando going forward. When she figured out that they couldn't do it the way, or that she couldn't do it the way that she wanted to, then she dropped it and she said, forget it, and she'd rather walk away. So she dropped the Guide to Warfare that's now in Jason Fry's hands and the second Imperial Commando book that is now just gone. It's vapor. But it makes me wonder, this is starting that debate all over again, and I'm sitting there saying, what is there to debate from this? All they did was show up here. Maybe if they do something else, that should reignite it. But this is not, this should be something that we're sitting here going, yes, awesome. Not sitting here thinking, oh man, this is going to start the flame wars again. If seeing the Republic Commandos in 30 seconds is going to cause a flame war, we got a problem in the fan community, don't we?
Well, we know it's against continuity that they would just be dragging a dead body somewhere. They, you know, you wouldn't take Republic Commandos and put them, you know, on that kind of duty, would you? Okay, I'm just kidding.
Republic Commando is being sent to recover the body of a Jedi on a planet that was just taken by the Separatists. Makes perfect sense, actually.
One thing that I wonder, though, is, you know, I wonder if this even is any part of what all that controversy was about. Because if you really come down to it, if they changed them kind of at the last minute because they had the chance to have the resources available to make the character models, then how far ahead could this actually have been planned? I don't know. As much as I am a stickler for continuity and I like to see how everything fits together and whatnot, I think this is one of those instances where people are jumping off cliffs without parachutes when they try to make this I can't believe they did that kind of argument. You know, just take it for what it's worth. It's cool. Yeah, Sev's hand mark is a little bit different than it was in the game. It's a different character model. Deal. Dooku's chin really didn't look like carved wood when it was Christopher Lee, did it? Chill.
That's a nod that you can just appreciate, think, hey, that's neat they did that. I know those people, and those people are from a popular game. And, I mean, to me, it's just I see that and thinking, man, when are they going to make Republic Commando 2 for Xbox 360, for crying out loud?
Well, it's the same thing with, we got Sayce 10 for this episode. He was a new character model, if I'm remembering correctly. Cool. They drop him into that same scene. He didn't get a chance to talk, but here's a new character. But so much attention's focused on the Republic Commandos and the Maul image at the end. Sayce 10's kind of being overlooked, but he's another new one in there. It's nice to see them expanding in a way that's not even in your face. I mean, it wasn't like they were taking the Republic Commandos and giving them a huge action sequence out of the middle of nowhere. They were just in a scene in a natural way. Same thing with Sayce 10, only with Sayce 10, there's no hype, and it blew right past a lot of us. It's a well-played introductory episode for some of these side characters that hopefully we'll see more.
I think this is the perfect use of this type of character, too. And this is the Star Wars is perfect for this type of cameo. And I don't really think they do it very much. They have all these episodes that center on these obscure characters. And I think it's a lot of fun for the fans just to have these characters that you could not know who they are and just go, hey, that's a cool guy in armor. Or you could know who they are and have this total geek out moment. Be like, hey, that's Delta Squad. Oh, my God, that's awesome. So I think they should do more of that kind of thing. And I think it's great to see them being used like that. They just show up, hey, how you doing? It's a cameo. And that's it. And it was really cool. it was just, it's just neat to see, because like Karen Travis is actually what got me into the EU to begin with. Like, I started reading books from Star Wars. I hadn't touched one until I picked up Republic Commando books. So it's just a neat little thing. This is how the EU can be used in this type of thing. So you can have Lucas have his like favorites and have them out there in the limelight, but having these little minor characters kind of walk by, just a little cameo, I think that's like the best use for this type of universe that Lucas has created, because there's such a rich variety of characters to use in this situation. So it's just great. I loved it. Just, they show up, they're gone, and it's just a little geek moment. It's perfect.
Exactly, Jen. That's how I feel too. This should be a holy cow. That's from that book that I love. Just like Ayla Sekiro walking by in episode 2. That was a holy crap. She's from a comic book that I like to read moment for a lot of people. Not, well, what's she doing there? She should be... That should be how we look at this. That, wow, maybe Lucas does care what's out there in the EU, and he's putting it in there, and he's slipping it in there and giving us the nod and the wink. It's, yeah, I know what you like. Not, oh, well, that's not right, and getting all upset and starting the Karen Travis flame war again over 30 seconds in the rain.
Also, I think this episode does a very good job of harkening back to a lot of stuff, not just, you know, EU or film stuff, but just within the series itself. Savage Opress, Tarjay, could have been sent out after anybody, but he gets sent after King Katunko. We saw him in ambush, we saw him in supply lines, we have a connection to this character. He didn't get to say a whole lot in this episode at all, but we get him in there, we feel the death. I mean, it's not like this is a character that was greatly beloved or anything like that, but I think that if they had just tossed in any random character for Savage to go after and then wind up having to kill or killing by accident, as the case may be, that it wouldn't have had much of an impact. You give us somebody like King Katunko, he's not elsewhere. He was confined to the series, but he's been coming back enough that we've started to know him. We started to think, oh, he's one of these mainstay type characters. And then, just like Anaconda Farr, he's gone. And we get more of an impact because we've seen him before. They're finally paying off some of these characters they've created before. Now, maybe they weren't intending Katunko to eventually die, but they're paying off some of the attention we've been paying to the series as a whole. Great referencing episode all around.
Run the landing pad, the two dead Jedi arrive, and the live Jedi there discuss what or who could have done this, and they decide that it's some kind of animalistic monster, maybe a little bit of Jedi knowledge, maybe not, but something that is just on the verge of out of control is what did this. Flash over and we see Savage and Dooku in their first lesson, and we learned very early on that apparently Dooku feels that Force Lightning is the most effective teaching tool. Nathan, you're a teacher. Do you think that would work better for you?
Electroshock therapy,
wish,
yeah.
All the times I've said we need to get tasers and have some kind of extra metal visible on the desks.
Little button that sends a shock through their seats.
Kind of like the beginning of Ghostbusters, you know?
Who
was the king of France leading up to the French Revolution? It was Henry the gum falls out of the mouth.
Like you said, not to get ahead of ourselves or anything, but that was funny because when they were fighting Dooku and poor Savage, every time the dude stood up, he got another shock of lightning. I even out loud said to my wife, said, Savage, dude, just stay down. It was like that high school fight where somebody gets up and gets punched out again. Eventually, like, man, just stay down.
I'm surprised Savage's tonsils weren't glowing by the, like, he took so much voltage. Like, it was ridiculous.
Well, he was able to charge up his iPod after that.
Now, see, I looked at that and I thought, wow, this was actually a pretty brilliant move on the part of Dooku. He shocked that guy so many stinking times that it put him down, except for the part where it made him so mad he was able to lift up the stones. But that was like when you're teaching a dog not to run out of the yard by putting the electric collar on him. He's been shocked so many times that once he gets shocked, it just totally knocks the wind out of him until he gets so mad, then he whips out the double force choke. But that was actually pretty impressive how that kind of turned around and paid off for Dooku in that final fight that we will get to eventually.
You know, it kind of doesn't it make Luke look like a little whiny baby, though, at the end of Return of the Jedi? I mean, Savage is like, hang on, I'm getting up. Hang on. And Luke's all like, Father, please. He's got the electricity going on his teeth, for goodness sakes, you know? What I wanted to know about that scene, though, aside from where the lightsaber came from, because presumably it was just given by Dooku, and no, that's not Maul's lightsaber. It doesn't look the same. For those who are out there saying, how did he get his lightsaber back? That's not it. That's how it's there. But in this whole episode, where did his magic blade come from? They went through all that trouble of presenting him with it in the last episode, but in this episode he's using a double-bladed lightsaber the entire time. Granted, it's awesome to see him with the double-bladed lightsaber. It makes that fight that's three different ways with the five different blades ignited at one given time really cool. But where does other blade go? Why bother to present him with it if he's not going to use it aside from that one scene on Deveron?
Yeah, that was kind of interesting that he didn't maybe throw aside the double-ended lightsaber and whip that out and whoop some people's butts. But that is a good question. I did like how his double-ended saber, it almost growls like he did. It had a lower hum than the lightsabers that we're used to, or even Asajj's and Dooku's in that scene. It just had a deeper bass rumble. It was very cool.
And it's got that little, I don't even know what to call it, almost like a fang-type tip sticking out of both ends, just like if you look at Dooku's saber and Asajj's sabers at different points, depending on the series, how it's got that little point sticking out over the lip of the emitter. It was kind of nice to see some continuity between the different blades being used by all these people, who presumably are getting their lightsabers from the same places because they're all training together and such.
Back on Coruscant, we find Obi-Wan has been summoned by Yoda and Mace to look at security footage from the attack on Deveron. And at first, Obi-Wan thinks he is looking at Darth Maul.
Because all people of that species look alike. You know, I mean, Maul had much shorter horns. Savage is built like a linebacker. And somehow he's thinking this is the same person. And it bothered me a little bit because you got Eeth Koth is on the Jedi Council, and you got Agen Kolar, another Jedi who thus far hasn't shown up in this series, but another Jedi Council member from the films who is a Zabrak, and yet Yoda refers to him as a creature of the same species. Obi-Wan refers to him later as an animal. Dooku's calling him a beast. We've heard him referred to as monster over and over again. It really struck me as a very, for lack of a better term, a speciesist response to the way everyone was viewing Savage. Granted, he's this powerful butt-kicking baddie that you don't want to mess with, and he is the enemy. But how many different ways can you make this character appear to be animalistic in terms of the way that all the other characters viewed him? It struck me as almost out of character for at least Obi-Wan and Yoda to call him creature or animal. Though I did like the fact that Obi-Wan gets that remark in there about Iridonia, which goes back to the continuity corner last episode about the Zabraks and where they come from. It is just a colony of Zabraks, according to Insider 122.
See, I was kind of okay with how they referred to him because I took that as being more of a reference of that particular group of Zabrak males that are raised on Dathomir, that maybe they're more animalistic and savage than the rest of the species or the rest of the rest of the Zabraks. So maybe it was they recognized by his markings and such that he is that type, so he is more of just a beast.
Well, they also, Savage is almost a little bit, like, he harkens back a little bit to Frankenstein's monster. He's kind of been created, or at least enhanced, so it's not crazy to think of him as being a little bit monstrous just because he's been totally, I guess, just, like, way worse than, like, roids. He's just totally been changed over his whole, like, mindset, everything has been changed, so he is almost a little bit monstrous. I can kind of see it. It didn't really bother me.
Okay, so Obi-Wan is informed of where these type of Zabrak men are from, and him and Anakin take a little trip to Dathomir. Once they arrive, they are immediately surrounded by the men and attacked, and this time the guys seem to put up a little bit more of a fight than they did against Asajj.
Well, you know, with Asajj, according to Viscus, they thought Asajj took Savage as her mate. So maybe they're like, well, I don't want to be with either of these dudes, so let's take him out. Although Anakin is good with the ladies, as he points out in the episode. Unfortunately, he's not very good with the laddies.
Yeah, that was funny how when they went to the women's camp, Anakin was almost excited because the ladies love me.
Yeah, that was a funny line. What was even better, though, was Obi-Wan's response. That one I really took note to. It's like, well, perhaps they love you too much. And it's just like, dude, shut up. I know about your marriage. Don't go there.
Don't start with the women folk. I also like the fact that in this episode, just like with that line about Iridonia, we get these quick references just in the background, just little throwaway references that help show that Katie Lucas had an understanding of what was developed before. What do we get? We get the line about the Night Sisters being in exile or banished or whatever it was for a very long time, hence why they're not sort of the mainstream part of the society. We don't see any good witches or anything, but they've been banished from somewhere for something that they did. So presumably there's a positive society out there anyway. Obi-Wan makes reference to how people know it's a female-dominated planet. Yoda is the one who points out Dathomir, as opposed to Maul being from Iridonia, which makes sense because Yoda was with the Ch'unthor in the EU crashing on Dathomir about, 200-300 years or so before. It just kind of shows that she's done some research. You don't have to hit people over the head with EU references. You can do just like what we were complimenting with the Republic Commandos, with little tiny references here and there. Just kind of give a nod and go. It doesn't have to be heavy-handed to work.
So Anakin and Obi-Wan are on their way to talk to Mother Talzin. Meanwhile, Dooku has sent Savage to Toydaria. Once Anakin and Obi-Wan arrive and have their little chat with Mother, it's very interesting that even Obi-Wan falls to calling Mother Talzin Mother. She reveals to them that he has been sent to Toydaria. Now, one wonders if this is because she thought there was no way that they would be able to defeat him, or is this just another stitch in Mother Talzin's little scheme, which seems to be, well, we'll get to that when we get closer to the end of the episode. So Mother Talzin points Obi-Wan and Anakin in the direction of Toydaria. They take off, and then she tells Asajj that the time has come for her to reveal her plan. Savage has been training for, 2 days? And now it's time? Really?
You know, it's funny, not to be jumping ahead, but to that point, I thought about that. It occurred to me that the only thing that she really needed Savage for was just to be the guy to take the Force Lightning. He was just like a shield or something in that battle, something to just distract him. But I thought that, too. It's like, wow, this plan doesn't really involve a lot of, patience. But I guess maybe that's not the Sith way either. It's just like, hey, let's do it. But I thought that was kind of funny, Dan. I picked up on that, too.
See, I thought it was actually kind of cool because we were saying in the last episode how much time is he actually going to have to train between these episodes? Are we going to wind up seeing that this episode takes place quite a bit after Monster? How long does this plan take to reach fruition? And how it felt like maybe it was going very, very quickly. Here, at least, we're given a reason for why it goes so quickly. The Jedi know about him. The Jedi will go after him and take him out, so you better do something quick. Otherwise, your opportunity may pass. I would have expected that we wouldn't have seen a conversation like that, and it would have just charged forward, and we'd have been sitting back here saying, wow, that seemed to go pretty fast. That's like Anakin falling to the dark side in Revenge of the Sith. And instead, we got a reason. I love the fact that conversation was in there. It legitimized the need for the final confrontation to be so soon after Monster.
I think it also lends, I know we're going to talk about this later, but I think it also lends support to the idea that maybe Mother is not in Asajj's court. She has something else in mind, and so she benefits from this happening too quickly and Asajj not necessarily getting to achieve her goal. So it just felt very natural in this case. They commented on it being rushed, and instead of it just being poorly cut or something, I felt this, just the whole episode was just beautifully done. I feel like they really explained a lot of things where they didn't need to, and they took the time to do it, and it just made everything flow really nicely.
So Savage arrives at Toydaria, and despite the attempts of Obi-Wan and Anakin to stop him, he kills everybody, even the king he was sent to capture alive. And here we see him start to whip out some serious force powers. I mean, we've seen him under duress and basically torture with the Force Lightning, be able to lift things, but he's actually showing some prowess with the Force. He's kind of seems skilled with that double-ended lightsaber. He wasn't able to do diddly squat to Dooku with it, but he's able to fend off both Obi-Wan and Anakin. So that was a pretty impressive scene. And then he throws their ship off the edge of the cliff to boot.
That whole sequence was strategy in a lot of ways. I mean, Katunko is up in the air, so what's he do? He gets on the little platform that raises him up to the right level. He's fighting against Obi-Wan and Anakin, and they get him in a position where it looks like Katunko may be able to get away. He reaches out with the Force and snaps his neck. Granted, he was probably meaning to just catch him and stop him from fleeing, but he's making use of that opening while it looks like he's being beaten. Then, as you mentioned, he knocks the ship down. It seems like the creators, and we've said this with several action sequences this season. They're doing a much better job at giving us action sequences with more angles to them, and that it seems like there's a little bit more strategy to them. And this is just another one of those. But I was really struck by the use of strategy in this one, more so than in most of the other ones we've seen.
You know, it was almost a cartoon moment. There's this cartoon that I don't imagine anyone's ever watched, but, you know, it's one of the old, early MGM 40s, 50s cartoons where there's this big bear who, you know, talking to the camera said, "I used to have a little friend, but he don't move no more." And he pulls out this like dead mouse. Right. And, you know, I thought about that for some stupid reason when Savage snaps that neck and he goes back to Dooku and he's like, "You idiot, you killed him." And he's just like, "But, you know, Toydarians are so fragile." I mean, he almost felt bad for the guy because it's like he didn't even realize what happened. Yeah, he's just dragging the Toydarian around like, "Here he is. He's asleep or something." That was funny, although I guess it is a good moment to just kind of show us how he doesn't have like the control over these powers. I mean, he's very powerful, has some good strategy, and does some really interesting things. I think him pushing the ship off was so Force Unleash-ish, but you know, I think it was a good moment. It was good for him to just like kind of mess up a little bit, or a lot of bit, I guess, if you consider killing an innocent hostage kind of a big deal.
I feel like this reinforced my kind of thoughts of him as being the Frankenstein's monster, because he was like a bull in a china shop. He was just really just flailing. And I didn't realize that he had killed the king immediately, but then he was dragging him behind like Og the caveman. Like, he just doesn't have any control. He's just blunt, everything. No finesse, nothing. It was interesting to see him deliberately portrayed that way, because it's so completely different from everybody else we've seen in the show.
I find it interesting that Jerry just reduced Savage Opress to Lenny from Of Mice and Men. Tell us about the rabbits, George.
That's space rabbits to you, my friend.
So, Savage returns with his quarry in a less-than-alive state, and Dooku is, well, he's a little disappointed. And this is where we see Ventress's plan revealed, and as I mentioned earlier, the score in that scene where Dooku has Savage on his knees shocking him and the door opens, the music at that point was awesome. Fit perfectly. It was just well done. That whole scene was really, really impressive. That was actually, I enjoyed that line of hers as well when she walked in.
Now, this was a great action sequence. You know, again, it had more to it, it seemed like, than most others. I mean, you've got some conversation between the different players. You've got Savage. I think that this kind of goes back to what we were saying in the last episode, where they've given Savage a little bit more personality than we would necessarily expect. And we said we wondered how much of that personality would continue forward into the next episode, or at least how much of that individuality. And in this case, even when he's tapped on the forehead and brought back under Ventress's control, during that fight, he gets to a point where he's like, "Oh, you know what? Both of you are probably going to end up getting me killed." And he grabs them both, you know, lifts them up with the force choke and such. And it was interesting to see the look on his face, the way they animated the facial expressions of him just getting to that point saying, "You know what? I'm done with this crap." To grab both of them and to have the tables turn. Instead of seeing, it was almost like seeing two different duels. Instead of seeing Savage and Asajj versus Dooku, it flips it around and we get Asajj and Dooku versus Savage, or sort of a three-way battle where it's sort of everyone for themselves. That was kind of a cool twist. And again, showing us more in these action sequences than we're used to.
The duel continues as Ventress chases Dooku down into the bowels of the ship. And Obi-Wan and Anakin show up, and we see that they actually did not put a whole bunch in there. The comedic timing of the scene was as it was presented in the preview, and still a nice laugh scene, a good payoff, I felt. You just tossed them like ragdolls, because they walked in at the precisely wrong moment.
Well, he's able to do it twice. They walk in and, you know, "We'll take him together," and boom, they're down. But you notice when he does that, for lack of a better term, the force repulse, the move similar to Starkiller in the Force Unleashed games to knock out all the droids and everything around him, he flattens Anakin and Obi-Wan too. The next shot is them getting up as he's escaping. So this is a seriously, seriously powerful dude if he can do that to Anakin and Obi-Wan when he's not even engaging them directly at the time.
Yeah, that did harken back to Starkiller in the Force Unleashed. I thought that was really cool. And like the ship, we get a couple nice nice extreme force moves in this episode that remind us of the Force Unleashed games. Now, one thing I do wonder about this fight, is there something we didn't see? Because at the 18-minute mark, Savage is fighting Obi-Wan and Anakin. That's the part where they shove the battle droid into him and he stuffs it down and attacks him. His horns are all intact. Jump to 1852 after Dooku and Ventress have their little falling out. And they come into the hangar with the three of them still dueling. And Savage is missing 1 1/4 horns. What did we miss in that 52 seconds of their fight that had him almost catch a lightsaber to the head? I want to see that part of the fight. Don't show me him, all of his horns, and then a couple are gone really close to the front of his face and not tell me how the heck that happened.
Yeah, the deleted scene was just like him, like, poorly parallel parking the ship on Dathomir. He got rear-ended or something. That was part of it. Because his eyes were all messed up. I mean, it looked like one was, I can't believe I'm going to say this, but one looks even more bloodshot and seethy than the other one. So I don't know if that was just imbalance in his emotions or whatever. But you're right. I had the same thought. I was like, wow, that was a pretty hard fight for his horns to come off. And then I never, you know, got a chance to to see the episode again. But that was pretty funny.
He's like in the back of the ship twirling the lightsaber. Yeah, I'm awesome. I'm Savage Opress. Zip-sh. Oh.
Oh, crap.
Mother Towson ain't going like this.
I was really grossed out by his eye. Like, I've seen people who've had blood vessels break in their eye before, and it was just like I was doing the heebie-jeebie dance the whole time. So they did a good job because it evoked a real response for me.
Yeah, that kind of stood out to me, too. That was really impressive. That showed that he had really undergone some physical duress in those fights, in particular, probably all the voltage he took in from Dooku. But that was kind of – and him limping in there all shot up when it looked like – in the course of the battle, he wasn't feeling anything, which is probably the adrenaline rush of being betrayed and then betrayed and then betrayed. So, yeah, that was really pretty cool.
Like, please tell me there was at least a first aid kit aboard the shuttle or whatever it was. I mean, and was that, just speaking of the ship that he was in, they haven't ever made this clear. Are we believing at this point that that is Dooku's ship? Because Dooku's been seen using that ship previously. He even used it in one of the films. And here it is that Savage has just taken it to go to Dathomir. I wasn't sure if that was supposed to be a separate ship that he was flying around in, or if he's using Dooku's. It never quite made that clear, but if so, that's nothing. He's now got a ship he can use to get back out into the galaxy and kick some butt, or go train with his brother.
Yeah, I find it interesting that apparently he stole Dooku's ride. We've never seen it open up, but yeah, it is the sail ship from the end of episode 2. So maybe they don't have the character model for that yet. That's why we've never seen it whip out its sails. But
yeah, Dooku goes out to the garage and, oh crap, guy took my ride.
Turns out that it's lowjacked or something, and they track him back to Dathomir.
So Nathan touched on it. Savage Opress goes back to Mother and tells her that he has failed. And wait! Mother has another plan. This lady's just all kinds of plans. She tells Savage of his long-lost brother. And his brother is none other than Darth Maul. I'm sticking with that theory because the tattoos match up exactly. That is Darth Maul. There's no way that that's not.
I'm going to laugh if 2 weeks from now they show up and it's just Bob the Zabrak. And it's just.
But could this really be Maul? I mean, we've heard things about where Maul came from and even what if ideas about where Maul could be afterwards. Does any of this Maul stuff really tie in, Nathan, with what's already out there?
Well, I mean, there's a lot of people who are sort of freaking out saying, how could he be back? But when it really comes down to it, Maul's survival here, or Maul's appearance here, assuming this really is him, it doesn't really seem to affect all that much. He wasn't a very impactful character to begin with when it came to his impact on other stories and that sort of thing. And it's much easier to bring a character back from the dead in the EU, especially one that didn't have a lot of ramifications after his death, than it is to kill off a character early. Like, you have a character out of the films who has also been in the cartoon series who showed up in Star Wars Galaxies around the time of A New Hope, and then they put out a novel that killed him right after Revenge of the Sith. Oopsie! And they had to scramble to find a way to sort of make this work, which is in, which is out, that sort of thing. But when you reintroduce a character back from the dead, as long as it's not something like bringing Chewbacca back long after the New Jedi Order, and somehow before other novels that he didn't appear in and was still dead, in, it really doesn't have the same type of effect as you would expect. It kind of has that same, oh, he was out there, and especially if he's on the Outer Rim, it doesn't have much of a lasting repercussion on anything. Now, they've tried to bring back Maul three times because he was such a fan-favorite character. Not each time was meant to be canonical, but it's a trend that we're seeing, is that he is a popular enough character to bring back. George Lucas himself, as quoted by Dave Filoni in last week's commentary, wanted Maul back, hence the development of Savage in the first place. The first time anyone tried to bring him back, it was in Star Wars Tales number 9 in 2001. It's a short story called Resurrection, in which the prophets of the dark side, working on behalf of Sidious to sort of see if Vader really was worthy of being his apprentice still, brought Maul back from the dead through Sith alchemy. Now, they never quite explained directly, is this a clone? They hinted, no, it's not a clone, but how do you get him back and he's whole and that sort of thing? But somehow, through Sith alchemy, they bring him back, and you get this awesome knockdown, drag-out fight between Maul and Vader. That was amazing. It was considered to be non-canonical at first, only for Leland Chi later to confirm, and other sources, that, yeah, it is in continuity. So at some point later on, Vader will battle Darth Maul, at least in EUC canon-type stuff, as opposed to the cartoon series or films with Lucas's direct vision to it. Probably the least remembered time of Maul being brought back, which is also considered canonical, at least up to now, was in another Star Wars Tales issue, Star Wars Tales number 17 in 2003. They had a Halloween-themed issue, and Luke Skywalker goes to Iridonia on behalf of the New Republic, only to find that this mad scientist, Drell Kampf, kind of like Mein Kampf, but spelled differently, Drell Kampf has kept Darth Maul's brain alive in a vat, and he's using it to create this solid-state hologram. Think holodeck, hologram with physical substance, of Darth Maul that's going around terrorizing people on his behalf. And Luke defeats Darth Maul, in a sense, by shutting down the machine. That's another one, originally thought to be non-canonical, then it gets referenced in other sources, so apparently that, at least until we see how this plays out, is considered an in-continuity thing. But all you gotta do for that story to exist is have his brain still be around somewhere. So unless he falls into slag and gets melted into something, that story can pretty much still work anytime. Same thing with the Sith alchemy and resurrection. Why not? They didn't quite explain how they did it anyway. Oddly enough, the one that is non-canonical of his presumed returns is actually the one that more closely resembles the look of a Savage Opress in these episodes. You got this book called Star Wars Visionaries back in 2005. And what they did was they brought in ILM and people like that to write stories that weren't necessarily meant to be in continuity anyway. They would just sort of show their vision of some of these characters. And a guy named Aaron McBride writes a story called Old Wounds, which I think got a comic pack recently of the action figures. And in this, Darth Maul returns with much longer Savage Opress-type horns and a cybernetic lower body. By the way, those horns in the original Maul concept art were feathers. Imagine Savage Opress with giant feathers on his head. Somebody along the way got confused and turned them into horns. But you've got this story in which he shows up with a cybernetic lower half, bigger horns, confronts Obi-Wan about 3 years after Revenge of the Sith on Tatooine, gets his butt soundly kicked, and we kind of wrap up from there. That one was deemed outside of continuity pretty much from day one, but it's just another part of this trend. He's a beloved character, bring him back, very much like a Boba Fett, for example, back in the earlier days. Incidentally, if you're interested in that one with a knockdown dragout between Vader and Maul, or especially if you have it and can put it in front of you, the first Star Wars fan audio drama to adapt a pre-existing comic story, and the second Star Wars fan audio drama to ever be released online that wasn't by my team and I, is an adaptation of Resurrection by Ted Alderman and Brian Henry that you can find at starwarsfanworks.com/resurrection.html. It's fairly well done. I get to play Palpatine in it, but don't hold that against the project. It's a very well-known story, but it just goes to show that Darth Maul coming back is something that's been in people's imaginations for a while. Now we get to see how Lucas himself would handle it, and that's got a lot of positive potential. And with that, we don't need a continuity corner.
Actually, you know, I just got to say, I mean, I think the biggest fun of watching these shows and to get reintroduced, let's say, to Darth Maul. I mean, heck, I don't really think about Darth Maul that much because he really wasn't in a lot, even though he's a really awesome character. But so I, you know, Nathan, you just talked about stories I've never seen before. So, I mean, that's pretty cool. I had no idea about the Luke and the Darth Maul one. The other two I knew about, and I'm like you, I think that Darth Vader and the Darth Maul one is just an amazing story. I didn't realize they brought that into continuity. I thought that was, you know, just an Infinities type, Tales type thing. But the concept of Darth Maul coming back, to me, for some reason, I like it. I don't mind that episode one wasn't necessarily the end of him, because it goes back to anything else, like a soap opera or a comic book. If you don't have a body, there's no reason to say, oh, well, he got cut in half, you can't beat, well, just go with it, because Darth Maul's cool, and we should see him do some cool things.
And they also provided the ultimate rationale for partly how he could be out there on the Outer Rim. I mean, Savage Opress comes from Dathomir. He comes through the Night Sisters, and he winds up, as soon as he's beaten, he heads right back to the Night Sisters and says, what do I do now? Why couldn't Maul do the exact same thing, wind up on the Outer Rim in this exile, as they call it? I mean, he's one of those characters from the films whose death is left so open that you can really grab him. And I gotta say, I am very excited to see him back, if for no other reason that I think sometime in the near future, given that I have some students who watch the Clone Wars, I may break out my Celebration 1 Darth Maul jacket and wear it against the cold sometime soon, just to see their faces.
See, I love this idea of Darth Maul coming back, first of all, because Darth Maul was awesome, and it'd be cool, but really, if the Maker himself says Darth Maul is still alive after what happened to him, really, anybody who says that Boba Fett can't get out of a Sarlacc, suck it, because, yeah, this is...
Ah, but see, that's
free game, man.
Thing though, because Lucas is the one who said Fett doesn't get out of the Sarlacc, and it's been later that he's allowed others to expand upon it and bring him out of the Sarlacc. Here it's the reverse. Here it's other people assuming that he's dead, and now Lucas is saying, nope, he's resurrected, which brings back to that whole idea of G canon, C canon. Whose vision is it that guides the saga? Is it Lucas's, and Lucasfilm has to sort of scramble to keep up? Is it a combination of both? Are there times where people assume that Lucasfilm takes precedence rather than Lucas incorrectly? It makes for an interesting counterpoint, but I wouldn't say it's the same scenario. It's almost a reversal of it. It's the yin to the yang here.
I just want to hear Darth Maul in the next episode say, "Yeah, it's just a flesh wound."
I have no problem with this, but maybe that's just because I've been steeped too much in like Marvel comics. Like, there are characters in like Marvel and DC comics who have been dead, been buried. They dig him up 3 years later to make sure he's still dead. They do a DNA test on the corpse. He's still dead. They bury him again. And then 20 years later, he'll just show up and everyone's like, oh, hey, we thought you were dead. So like, this doesn't bother me. So I think it'd be cool to see him with the cyborg parts personally, just because we've never seen anything. He'd be like a half Grievous, I guess, but it would be neat to see. Just either way, I'm happy to see him come back, just because he's a fun character and he didn't get nearly enough screen time in episode one.
And we already have the action figure.
Yes, him coming back as the Mecha Maul, them picking that as the way to bring him back would be awesome.
Although I would just kind of prefer him have Darth Vader like, you know, legs that you know they're fake because they have to be, but just wear the pants over and nobody really needs to dwell on it.
You know, all this talk about continuity and why continuity and why not continuity kind of reminds me of a voicemail that we got this week. So why don't we go ahead and get into our voicemails? And our very first one comes from John.
Hey, guys, this is John. And I really appreciate the podcast. I like how you guys break everything down for the Clone Wars episodes. But I just had a minor complaint, and it's nothing big. But I mean, I know you guys are real big fans of the EU, and I like parts of the EU also. But I mean, sometimes when you guys say, I wish they had incorporated this into an episode, or wow, Dathomir isn't what I expected it to look like, or they should have made it look like this. I mean, I know that you guys are passionate about the EU, as I am too. But I mean, I think we should be thankful that George even used stuff like that in the first place. I mean, he didn't have to include Dathomir. He didn't have to include the Night Sisters. Heck, he didn't have to make the Night Sisters from Dathomir. But the Clone Wars team, they take parts from the EU that they like and think would help the story, and they incorporate it into the episode. Because, I mean, really, when it's all said and done, he made it, and the EU is just playing in his sandbox, if you think about it. But, I mean, we have things to be thankful for. I mean, look at Aayla Secura. Look at Quinlan Vos. George took parts from the EU and used them. So really, I think we should be thankful for the stuff that the Clone Wars team does use. as kind of a shout-out to us, because we can't expect them to use and incorporate all of the EU that we may know and love. Because, I mean, really, I can't write a book or a follow-up to maybe a story such as Lord of the Rings, and then if they came out with a TV series and didn't use my story, I would have no reason to be upset. I mean, it's their series, they created it, and if they use my stuff, great. But I can't expect them to use everything in the expanded storytelling universe. So, in conclusion, I think we should be thankful for when they do incorporate something, even if they might not have to. So, until next time, this was John, and thanks for the podcast.
Well, thank you, John. I'm going to let our EU guy himself respond to that first. Nathan?
All right. Well, you know, I think it's a very important message that people need to hear, that fans need to be reminded of, that yes, Lucas can pretty much do whatever he wants. It's his saga. Whether you're talking specifics and going G canon versus TC or whatever, or T canon versus something else, doesn't matter how nitpicky you get. It's George Lucas. He created the saga. He gets to decide. And when he deems to bring EU elements into the series, or the creative team decides to bring them in with his approval, that's cool. We should be excited that they're caring about the EU at all. One of the biggest fears when the Clone Wars cartoon series began was that they were going to just ignore continuity all over the place when it came to the spin-off materials, the expanded universe stuff. I know, it takes some people off to say spin-off materials, but that's what they are. Expanded universe, yes. All cohesive, for the most part, yes. Still just spin-off materials here. Now, the one thing that kind of had me scratching my head just a little bit was that I wasn't sure why this particular voicemail felt the need to remind us of this particular fact, because granted, we talk about the EU quite a bit in relation to the series, but we've said repeatedly, in fact, I know that I've gone on tears repeatedly here on the show since probably middle of last season, talking about exactly that point, that Lucas gets to make the decision. We have to keep things in perspective as we go along here. Me in particular, that's been my mantra since, in podcasting at least, since Chrono Radio in 2002, 2 years before the word podcasting existed. Go before that, back to the Star Wars Timeline Project. I've been talking about George canon beating other canon well before that was ever made an official policy that people knew about. We were looking at evidence, trying to figure out what trumps what, and even which versions of Lucas's vision trumps which other versions of Lucas's vision well back into the late 1990s. I do think, though, that it's something that maybe as much as we talk about the EU, we don't stress enough. We say it, we believe it, but I think maybe because we don't feel like we need to repeat ourselves all the time, or that people might get annoyed if we're constantly being redundant and saying that all the time, that maybe it seems like it slips by. But that is something. I mean, we all follow that same principle, I think, when it comes to the hosts of this show. And when we have strayed a little bit in that other direction, I hope that I personally have been able to turn around and kind of drag us back towards reality, because intellectual honesty pretty much demands you accept Lucas's role over it. On the other hand, though, I mean, let's make sure that we're not downplaying the EU aspect of it. Lucas may create these ideas in a vacuum, but the cartoon series itself does not exist in a vacuum. We're in the business of trying to, or the fandom, so to speak, of trying to talk about it and talk about all the different angles of something. And I think we're not doing you as an audience justice. We're not doing the creative team behind the Clone Wars justice, the series justice, the saga justice, if we ignore the EU ramifications and the EU aspects. We just try to bring it up as appropriate, sometimes integrated, like in this episode, sometimes as a separate continuity corner segment of the show. But, you know, I think we pretty much are with you, John. We accept Lucas has control over it. We love the fact that they're bringing in the EU stuff from time to time. We're glad when we see it used and at least see them acknowledging it, even when we don't necessarily think that it was used in a way that we might have chosen to. But that's a matter of opinion. That's a matter of critique and discussion afterwards. So amen to the point that you made, and hopefully if it does seem like we're not making that point enough, we can make it more often. But I definitely think we need the EU aspect of it. iTunes reviews at times be darned. I think we need the EU aspect. Otherwise, we're not discussing the episodes as thoroughly and as intellectually honestly as we should be.
Thanks, Nathan. Now, I'll play the other side of that. I'll admit, you know what? There are times when I have been downright almost up in arms, as particularly points in season 2, where it seemed like they were just going down the list and, okay, we're going to completely invalidate this novel today, and next week's episode is going to take out these three. There were times when, yeah, I was a little upset that they didn't seem to be paying attention to it. And yes, I know it is George's sandboxer, but I feel like, you know, George made the original trilogy, then he handed the keys over and took a nap in the back seat and let somebody else drive for a while. Then we got almost to Disney World and he's decided we're going to go to the Grand Canyon now. I feel like he let the authors loose. I mean, there was a time we hear how much red tape and how many circles people had to dance in to do things in his universe. I mean, we've all heard the stories about what they had to go through to kill General Nadine in Darksaber, and who knows what they had to do to kill Chewbacca in Vector Prime. So there's a point where Lucas, or at least people associated with Lucas, had to know what was going on in the new stuff. So the excuse can't be that they went willy-nilly and he doesn't know and he doesn't care. But now that he's taking the reins again, or taking a more active role in directing where the story goes, to throw away things that we've come to know and for lack of a better term, love as part of Star Wars, that can be a little frustrating.
But the frustration, though, may come from us as fans of EU items, but I don't think that even at your most frustrated, Dan, I don't think you've ever said Lucas has no right to do what he's doing, and I don't think that if pressed, that you would go so far as to say that Lucas was controlling the EU as it was out there, because that just isn't the case. I mean, it's exactly like what you said. He allowed somebody else to drive it for a while, but to continue that metaphor a little bit, yes, he allowed other people to drive it. But he made sure they knew that there was an understanding ahead of time that when it came to driving this particular saga vehicle, he wasn't giving them the car. He was simply giving them the keys. I don't think there's ever been a point where you've made the argument that Lucas shouldn't do it because other people have it. Frustration, yes, but have you ever jumped so far as to think he shouldn't be able to do this? Because I think that's what John is getting at, is the recognition that this is Lucas's playground. I mean, I love the fact I got to play in the sandbox. I mean, for the love of crap, I got to set the freaking date for Return of the Jedi, and I about dropped in a faint, you know, whenever I was able to do that. But it's his sandbox. You've never jumped that far, have you?
No, I don't think I have. I've never gone so far as to say that, well, George let other people do it, he should just step off and just accept that he's lost creative control, because that's just crazy talk.
I've come close in the sense to say that he certainly has all the rights and certainly has the legal rights to do whatever he wants with it. I mean, you can't argue that. That is fact. Although my opinion is that he should be more, you know, almost to the point that he understands what's been done first and makes choices around that, because there's too many things that we see to where you get the, well, that was just George's vision. You're like, really? You know, Greedo showing up in that one episode in which he impacted or did nothing was part of the vision? Are you serious? And so Dan, I've been with you to where it's just like, well, I just want to show people who's really in charge, so I'm going to go mess with this. It comes off that way from time to time. And personally, I'm not even a big EU guy. There's a few things I know, and there's a few things I've enjoyed and I've read, and I don't mind separating things in my mind, saying, well, yeah, it's kind of weird to think Darth Maul would come back, but hey, why not? That, in my mind, doesn't contradict the darn thing, and it's not, that one's not even very blatant. Even the Mandalorian thing from last season, I was like, okay, but you know, it was fun, and you know, maybe I'm just kind of blissfully ignorant or whatever, but I mean, at the same time, I don't feel like I should be thankful that Dathomir's in here, because quite frankly, I didn't have an opinion about Dathomir. I don't remember enough about EU and Dathomir to have an opinion. I read Courtship of Princess Leia a couple years ago, and I thought it was a fine book. I didn't have an opinion of or a mindset of what Dathomir should look like. But for someone to say that, oh, you know, I thought Dathomir would be more like this and less like that, but, you know, oh, well, that's not being critical. That's just saying, hey, you know what, guys? In my head, for some reason, I always just thought it looked like this, and it was kind of interesting to see it look like that. I mean, if that's the kind of thing I'll agree with John, if that's the kind of thing that you are overly critical about, then, yeah, you need to get over it. I mean, that's just, you know, you can imagine all sorts of things. It's like, I'll use you guys as an example. I mean, when I first started getting on Skype with you guys and just talking with you, but I had never met you or seen pictures of you, you form an image of what a person looks like in your head, at least I do, and you meet them in person, it's not like you say, hey, you don't look right. I mean, no, that's silly, but it's just say, oh, you know, I pictured you taller or something stupid like that. I mean, you just have those things. And I think part of the fun of doing a Star Wars podcast, and I appreciate the kind words, and John, thank you for listening to the show and, you know, enjoying us week in and week out. But, you know, there are times it's just fun to talk about Star Wars, even though it's not a critique or a compliment either way. It's just us talking about what we are thinking at this current moment in time.
I think it's just because we love Star Wars so much and we're enjoying the series so much that we do get a little bit emotionally invested in some of the stuff. Like, I personally, the Republic Commando stuff, the Mandalorian stuff, I was kind of near and dear to my heart because I really, really love that series. And so it's kind of like, yes, it's Lucas's sandbox, but like you've just, you know, little Jimmy has just made a really cool little thing in the corner. And then Lucas kind of says, well, you kind of got to move that. My big castle has to go there. And you kind of just have that aw moment. And that's kind of all. Like, I have, at least for me, I express my little aw and then I move on. Because in the long run, this is just entertainment. It's all a fantasy world. It could all just go poof tomorrow. Lucas, you know, Skywalker Ranch could have a fire or something and the whole thing could go. It's just, it's all in everybody's heads. So like, it's not a big deal. If you're, you know, sweating all this stuff, it's, you're taking it too seriously.
Hi, my name is Madeline. I'm 13 and I wanted to leave a report on the show. This week's episode was epic. I mean, it was so cool. And I thought how they brought the Republic Commandos was so awesome. And I kept telling myself over and over and over that Ventress or somebody was going to die. And when they all got away, I was just like, okay, are you kidding me? Come on. But I just loved it. The cinematics, the animation, it was just amazing. And I just want to let you know, I listen to Republic Forces Radio Network all the time. You guys are like my favorite podcast. So, all right. Bye.
Thank you, Madeline. We're glad you're enjoying the podcast, and thanks so much for calling in.
That was a great voicemail to listen to, and thank you for listening, and you know, hopefully you enjoy the rest of the season and whatever we got cooking in the off season.
Thanks for the voicemail. It's great to hear this is one of those shows that's able to get an audience among all ages. I actually teach people not that much older than you, so it's kind of cool to see your generation really getting into this. Not a lot of my students have been, so it's nice to know that it's out there. Also, I think we were all surprised to see everybody not only survive, but to have Asajj not go back with Dooku by the end of the episode. There's all kinds of potential there for further on in the series if we're going to have Ventress out there as a wild card for a while. If they're going to make it fit the continuity, she's got to go back at some point, but maybe they won't. Who knows where they're going with this? It's an exciting prospect, and we hadn't mentioned it earlier in the show, so definitely an interesting point.
Hello, this is Josh, calling about this week's Clone Wars episode, which is The Mist, and these Clone Wars episodes just get better and better and better. I absolutely love this one, just every single aspect. I mean, besides, in fact, I think it's been the last three episodes have just been the best I've ever seen in Clone Wars. If Clone Wars was turned out like this, that would have been even better. But, yeah, in fact, a couple aspects that I definitely liked of it was, first, I actually really liked the animation on Obi-Wan's face because he looked exactly like he did in Episode 3, just about. I was afraid that they would go back a little bit towards his normal appearance in the Clone Wars, or they got no armor on. He looked perfect. I didn't really get a good glimpse of him, but this time he just looked excellent. Also, I also really liked that King Katuko, they died. It's because now almost seems like half of the characters that they've made up aren't safe anymore. Because, I don't know, I mean, I was actually kind of surprised when I saw him die. But as for definitely the best part in the episode, I especially liked it when King Katuko, when he pulled out that toothpick. And then he said, I'm not intimidated. Well, if there's someone who just took out half of your guards with blasters, I don't know, I wouldn't fight him with a toothpick. But yeah, that was a really great part of the episode. I loved every little bit of it. Now, as for the Darth Maul subject that they brought up of, I read it in a magazine. I think it was a Star Wars magazine. And I was kind of surprised when I saw that Darth Maul would be back. But, I mean, I know this will cause the biggest uproar in Star Wars history. You know, that will completely destroy a whole bunch of stuff and continuity and stuff. But, in fact, I actually don't mind it. I mean, that sets up endless possibilities about other characters who could have been killed. I mean, for instance, in one of the earlier podcasts, I think it was Arnie who said it, that there may be an episode where Mace Windu, where he survived that fall after he got lightning by Darth Sidious, and Boba Fett killed him. Well, I would like something like that. And I just really hope that they can do something like that. I really think that would be a great aspect of Clone Wars. And as for next week's episode, I'm looking forward to just as much as these three episodes. I absolutely love the preview. This is probably what I've been hoping for ever since Clone Wars began. So overall, just a great episode, and I love the show. All right, bye.
All right, Josh, thanks. But Josh, don't think Darth Maul coming back is going to destroy very much, as we've discussed. There's very little. Darth Maul was kind of hands off. Once he died, everybody kind of went on. A couple people tried to resurrect him, but him coming back is not really going to do that much, as we've already heard from the fabulous Nathan P. Butler.
Assuming I'm right, and I could be wrong, maybe there's some angle that we haven't explored. I think he brings up an interesting thing where, I mean, he said that maybe some of these other characters that we've seen, like Katunko, you know, they're not safe anymore. We've seen a lot of characters die, but it seems like if they can make it through a couple of episodes, they're all right, unless they happen to be ruling a separatist planet, in which case they die off screen and we just get a mention of them. But, you know, it does bring up a good point about, you know, he brought up Arnie's quote, and I actually remember Arnie saying that about, well, you know, we'll just find that Mace Windu got zapped and he somehow like landed on a speeder and he did that sort of thing. Obviously, they couldn't do that with Clone Wars with Mace, but we have a live action series coming, assuming they ever get it back going again once they figure out how to make it work. There's definitely some aspects of film characters that haven't been explored. Remember, most of the characters that we see in the background of the films get explored in the EU. There's bound to be plenty of those side characters that Lucas likes the design of and might want to somehow bring back, whether living or dead. And it may be in a completely different way than the way the EU has approached that character. There's all kinds of possibilities when Lucas is able to go back and say, you know what? Here's a character I wanted to explore. Didn't get as much chance to. I like the design. Let's run with it. It's definitely a new realm of possibilities. I think Darth Maul is the biggest character that we've seen return at a Lucas order, a Lucas request. And if he can bring back somebody who is that big, maybe not in impact, but a character that's that big in terms of visibility and how everybody knows, quote-unquote, he was dead, he can bring back just about anybody he wants. Even Qui-Gon!
Now, what I think about the death of the Toydarian king is, as Josh brought out, this is another character we've seen die. We saw Anakonda Farr die. We've seen Padme's friend, the Separatist, die. Well, we didn't see her die, but as Nathan said, she died off camera. These are characters that this series introduced, gave us stories on, and killed. They are prepping the way for the day that comes where Ahsoka dies, so that we're not going to get hurt by it when it happens. We're going to see no one's safe. It's okay. She's going to go.
I like that. Well, no, but think about, if you think about the we're going to get to the preview here in a little bit about the preview of next week, but the line is, you know, you'll never see the future if you remain his apprentice. They seem like they are setting up the idea that something major could wind up happening to Ahsoka at some point.
Hey, I've said all along that one of the things that will help push Anakin to the dark side is Ahsoka leaving him for another master, whatever that may look like. So when they played that, I know we're jumping ahead. I heard that. I was like, see. And Satine's behind all the corruption on Mandalore, too.
Hi, everyone. It's Robert Darth Akari calling in for Republic Forces Radio Network with my thoughts on Sister, which is the Mist. Sorry, I got the name wrong. But wow, that was one incredible episode. I was a little concerned at the start. It seemed like there was going to be some pacing problems or whatever with the whole Obi-Wan going to meet Mother Talzin. It seemed a little rushed, a little forced at the beginning. But holy cow, the second, third act of that episode, I mean, it killed King Tanuko. I mean, who would have thought that? I mean, we finally started to, I was actually really beginning to like that character after he was sort of fleshed out just earlier this season. But, and then the three-way, four-way, five-way, eight-way lightsaber battle droid fight that went on, you know, between Obi-Wan and Anakin and Savage and it was just incredible. Really very impressive. And the thing that really got me was is at the end with the moment between Dooku and Asajj, I honestly thought for a second he was going to kill her. It was, you know, I knew that, you know, they're trying to stay true to the expanded universe, but for a second they really kind of, you know, got me there. And the whole introduction of the possibility of Darth Maul appearing, well, you guys kind of called it, although they did kind of spoil that earlier at the movie review when they mentioned that too. So I kind of knew he was going to appear in some way, shape, or form. But all in all, I can hardly wait to see what they do next. Plus also, you know, Liam Neeson next episode. I mean, who would have thought they would have actually managed to get that to happen? But especially considering that they couldn't get him to come back for episode 3, but they're able to get him to voice his character for an episode of Clone Wars. So, really gives me high hopes for what the future holds for the rest of this season. Although now it seems like we're going to be getting swamped with all sorts of new ideas and things coming in. The first half seemed kind of slow, and now the second half seems like we're going to be on a roller coaster ride. So, but always enjoying the show. I'll call you if anything else interesting happens, and have a good one, guys. Bye.
Hey, this is Samuel, Master Coach Rock from the RFR Informs, with my thoughts on Witches of the Mist. First of all, I think this episode was a step up from the first two of the Asajj Ventress, Savage Opress trilogy. Flawless episode from beginning to end, with the perfect amount of action, I think story mixed together. I was shocked, though, that Asajj didn't die, and in fact, no returning or ongoing characters died except for Katsinko. Delta Squad, just, yeah, from in chronological order, I think Delta Squad, I'm really excited to see them, see their character models, which means we're going to see more of them. I found it interesting that Jedi didn't even mention General Grievous as one capable of killing everyone on Devron, only Asajj Ventress, which is kind of interesting. This kind of goes with what has been said on the show. I liked a lot how they smoothly retconned Maul being from Dathomir. Dooku was major in this episode, you know, with the monolithic pillars. That was awesome. And then his use of Force Lightning later. And, you know, just great way. I think that was kind of interesting to see the Sith training. You know, it's like total abuse, I guess, which feeds anger. So that was cool. And then Dathomir, really liked the lighting this time. And the Night Brother Village just kind of seemed a little darker last time. It seemed really nice. Maybe it was just because of Anakin and Obi-Wan, you know, their lighter, less dark uniforms, I guess. And then I think in the Night Sisters episode, it was a little rushed, that scene with the Night Sisters surrounding Asajj. But in this one, it was really great with the bows actually seemed like way better animated, those laser bows, which are kind of cool. And then after Savage was kicking hide on Tordaria, you know, when we went to the Separatist Dreadnought, that was awesome. Best lightsaber battle in the Clone Wars, hands down. And I was really expecting Ventress to die, but alas, she has a lot of practice with her escaping abilities. And then, of course, at the end, the bombshell, Darth Maul. I was like, wow, that's like really exciting for where the season's going. You know, with a lot to cover this season, the rest of the season, I hope we get to see some more of him before the summer break. So, looking forward to the rest of the season. Thanks. Bye.
Hi, this is Austin calling in with my review of this week's Clone Wars episode, Witches of the Mist, I think it was. First off, liked the episode. Really liked it. Especially the Republic Commandos coming down in the rain. That was awesome. And if they don't put that in further episodes, that is going to make a lot of people really mad. And I guess two things I would like to bring up would be Savage Opress just completely making Ventress and Dooku look like 2-year-olds. this huge force choke and all the other stuff that he does to him. Love that. And I want to bring up one more thing with, or the other thing is that how can, back a couple episodes and now, how can he switch from that enchanted stick with magic and stuff? How can that be better than a lightsaber when they first give it to him? And how can it just smash the clone armor when a lightsaber just makes a cut or something and it kills him? I'd like to see a little bit more showmanship, maybe, if that's the word you want to use. I think cover that. And I love the show. You guys do a great job, and this episode was awesome. Okay, bye.
All right. Well, we want to thank everybody who called in this week. A lot of voicemails. We're glad so many folks are enjoying this show and are thinking about it and what it means for continuity, what it means for Star Wars fans on a whole. And remember, if you would like to give us your thoughts on the latest episode of The Clone Wars, you can give us a call. Where at, Jerry?
415-508-JEDI. That's 415-508-5334.
So next week, we will be treated to Overlord, the first episode of another three-part arc where we see... Actually, you know what? I didn't see the full preview. I have not been able to find it at all. All I have seen is the preview that gives us the scene with Obi-Wan Kenobi and Qui-Gon Jinn, or the Force Ghost of Qui-Gon Jinn, voiced by none other than Liam Neeson, something that has made quite the ripple in the fan community. A lot of people very excited to see Liam coming back to reprise his role. Excited to see Qui-Gon Jinn, as we mentioned earlier. Nice to see them pulling from prequel trilogy elements and giving us some nice stories rather than feeling they need to find a way to throw another OT character in there. Everybody excited about the next group of episodes?
I am super interested in seeing where this is going. This is, to me, a bigger, like, oh my God, than just knowing about Darth Maul has a brother. Oh my goodness. And like, this came out of nowhere. I mean, this was one, you know, Nathan, you're talking last week about how they've showed us all this and they showed us all this. This is just like, hey, by the way, next week, Liam Neeson's Qui-Gon Jinn. Okay. Just okay. Bye. It's like, what? So I'm really interested in seeing where this is going. And I know Nathan, you're privy to some information through the Clone Wars magazine. I'm super anxious to hear what that's got to say.
You want to talk about something that's not being noticed until right as it's coming, just all of a sudden out of nowhere, boom, by the way, Liam Neeson's coming, and it's coming up very, very soon. Sam Witwer, who played Starkiller in The Force Unleashed 1 and 2, is also making his return to the Clone Wars in this three-episode arc. I believe it is next week with Overlords and a character named Sun, if I'm correct. It's one of two characters, it looks like. I'm leaning toward it being Sun, but I haven't seen a confirmation of that beyond a Twitter post, and heck if I can figure out who that was that said it or when they said it. So I'll just say I'm pretty sure that it's this Sun character. But Witwer and Liam Neeson coming back for an episode here. It's very cool to see this, and they're promising some big stuff. I mean, the preview said the origin of the Force and so forth. Being privy to some of that stuff from the Clone Wars magazine, I will say this is probably going to be one that's going to shock people's senses quite a bit.
I'm super excited for this episode. I like stuff that kind of changes things up a little bit. Like, I know there's probably going to be drama out the windows next week because it's going to... I don't know exactly what's going to happen. I haven't heard any spoilers yet, but I'm sure there's going to be something and people are going to flip out. If they're flipping out over Delta Squad, they're going to be... like, heads are going to be coming off over this. But I think it's going to be kind of interesting. I'm excited to see it. And I'm a big fan of Liam Neeson anyway. So hearing his voice coming out of Qui-Gon again is really exciting. And it's in the Clone Wars. And it's a whole new mold. And are we going to be seeing him in the future more often? Maybe even just a cameo. He doesn't have to speak something. I think it's cool. I'm excited.
All right. Well, there is a little bit more information on this. So this would be a good time for anyone who wants to stay spoiler-free. You might want to jump ahead a couple minutes. Listen to us say goodbye. Listen to the ending credits. Catch an outtake or two. But this, from here on out, is very spoiler-filled. You have been warned.
All right, folks. Here's what we seem to know from the U.S. version of the Clone Wars magazine, number 3, which was very recently sent out to subscribers. Episode 315, or Season 3, Episode 15, Overlords, is given an introduction that says, "What happens?" And the summary we get is, our three heroes, that is Obi-Wan, Ahsoka, and Anakin, arrive at the strange and wonderful world of Mortis, a realm hidden within a monolith outside of charted space. There they discover the father, son, and daughter, all capitalized by the way, a family of impossibly powerful force wielders who can shape themselves and their environment into anything they wish. They have drawn Anakin there because word has reached them of the prophecy concerning him and his role to bring balance to the Force. Anakin must prove he is the Chosen One, whose destiny is to replace the Father as Master of Mortis. And they further elaborate on this with one of the characters, the daughter, kind of going almost Genesis-esque, biblical, saying, "We're the ones who guard the power. We are the middle, the beginning, and the end." And we get a little bit more information about dire warnings coming through different visions that the characters have, how the environment of the planet changes as the two aspects of the Force, light and dark, shift in which is dominant at the time. Plants blossom in an eye blink, it says, and die off just as quickly. We find that some of the creatures that we saw in the trailer, if you saw that at the very, very end of the Cartoon Network airing, those creatures are the different beings. They can essentially shift forms, as it suggests, about shaping themselves and their environment as they wish. It looks like Sam Witwer is returning as the Sun character, and the idea here is that this place, it can control powerful force wielders by creating a fragile balance, whatever the heck that means. But the father is noted here as saying a family, that's the light side and dark side, is represented by daughter and son, and him as the balancer. A family in balance, the light and the dark, day with night, destruction replaced by creation. It almost feels like Hinduism with Brahma, Shiva, and Vishnu, sort of this balance of gods that keep nature together. But the idea that Anakin's destiny deals with a planet we've never heard of before, and this is like the fulcrum of the Force. I mean, there's nothing even in this episode preview in the magazine that says anything about where the Force comes from, and we're told the origin of the Force will be revealed here. It seems like the Force is being given a much more personalized form, an avatar-type form here, and we're leaning more towards a Hindu perspective in some respects, possibly, but for Anakin's destiny about bringing balance to the Force, having to do with going to a place that's full of the Force and somehow balancing light and dark there, that is completely different, I think, than anything anyone's ever guessed as to the whole issue of balance of the Force. Now, it could turn out being that there's different plays on it, that the way they're wording it here may be purposely vague so as to give different impressions, but just laying out that little bit of information that we know of, this is going to be an episode that is going to freak people out, and not because it's affecting the EU, but because it's affecting people's perceptions most likely of the films themselves. It's really going to be one of those mind-bending episodes, and it's only one out of a trilogy of them, so we're in for some surprising stuff, it looks like. Definitely stuff that is going to be interesting to see. And if they haven't revealed it in pictures yet, I would bet this is where we're finally going to see that darkened Ahsoka. The preview does have that line in there about how she'll never see the future if she remains Anakin's Padawan, whatever the heck that means. Very, very interesting stuff.
All right, it'd be interesting to see. Of course, maybe we'll get down to the third episode and we'll find out that they're just three crazy people. And no, wait, that's Star Trek Final Frontier, where they think they find God, and then they blow him up with a bird of prey.
Sure.
It's funny you said that, Dan, because when Nathan was talking that, Star Trek 5 pack popped up in my mind, too.
All right. I want to thank everybody for tuning in to listen to us discuss Witches of the Mist. I want to thank Jen, Jerry, and Nathan for taking time out of their busy Sunday evenings to sit down and talk with me.
You're welcome, Dan.
I invite everybody to join us again next week when we will discuss Overlords. Thanks a lot, everybody.
See you, everybody.
See you next time.
See ya.
Thank you for listening to Republic Forces Radio Network. Remember, we want your thoughts on the next episode of the Clone Wars series. You can leave us a voicemail at 415-508-JEDI every week from the time the new episode airs, and voicemails received by 1 a.m. Sunday morning may be included in our next episode. You can find our reviews of previous Clone Wars episodes, as well as our summer series reviewing the classic droid cartoon series, at our website, www.republicforces.com. And be sure to listen to our other Star Wars podcast, Star Wars Action News, covering all aspects of Star Wars collecting, from figures to high-end collectibles to Star Wars Band-Aids. Republic Forces Radio Network is hosted by Jerry, Arnie, Dan, Jen, Berent, and Nathan P. Butler of StarWarsFanWorks.com. Republic Forces Radio Network, RepublicForces.com, and Star Wars Action News are not affiliated with Lucasfilm or any other official Star Wars-related company. Star Wars and all that the Star Wars universe contains are copyright and trademark, Lucasfilm Limited, and no infringement is intended. Republic Forces Radio Network is a production of Venganza Media Incorporated, copyright 2011, all rights reserved.